will call the, what day is it? January 4th, 2022 Finance Committee meeting to order. Do we have to read the statement, Amelia?
Or you can just tell us a little bit about what it's about.
Well, the one that's on the agenda here, I thought, do we have to formally read that or something that we're...
if Mr. Shanahan was here, he would tell us that we need to read it, huh?
You do need to read it, John.
Okay. All right. So scroll down a bit so I can see the top of it.
Is that better?
No, you went the... Oh, yeah, there we go. That's good. Item two, consider a finding that is a result of the COVID-19 emergency meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health or safety of attendees, and the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to Government Code 54953, subdivision E1C. That said, item
so now, three. So now comes the question, do the members of the committee wish to hold this meeting via teleconference this morning?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I do also.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can move on to item three, which is comments from the public. We can take them now or we can take them on specific items. Are any hands or chats, Amelia?
No.
Amelia?
I do have a comment from Mr. Sullivan. Go ahead.
Could you just pass on, since Marty was already in the earlier meeting, could you just pass on to John my request in regard to those items that I brought up to improvements that ultimately come over and become a finance committee issue?
Perhaps best if you share them with Mr. Merchant yourself.
What's that?
Maybe if you told John yourself, then it's out of the horse's mouth, right?
So I didn't want to take up any more time than necessary. But John, this has to do with the water EDU and the 20 by 2020 and the reconciliations. I was asking for reconciliations in the matrix on water use so that we could have that data available to discuss, particularly in light of accessory dwelling units.
Right.
When it comes to, you know, demand and capacity necessary to do those things, along with, you know, determining what the, you know, what a residential EDU is under 20 by 2020 and whether that needs to have a finding or whatever, improvements or finance or the board itself decides. Some of this goes back to, you know, acquisition services agreements and that kind of stuff. But I just wanted to make sure that the things that I've asked improvements to provide in the plant, and not the plant, but the operations director to provide gets passed on to finance so it can be reviewed.
Okay. Tom, so I guess you have, I mean, you guys have an audio or a log of what you discussed in the improvements meeting that we can use to work on that with?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. John, let me make a comment on that. And John Sullivan, you're asking these questions based on the fact that you're working on some of your developments currently. And I'm trying to figure out, can you send us a letter asking us to update some numbers? Because from what I've seen, the last time these numbers were validated was in 2016 or 17, when we hired a firm to do an update to an integrated water master plan. And yep. I'm guessing that you have a desire to get some definitions on the ADU's capacity because you plan on selling properties that have capacity for ADU's. Is that what you're telling us?
What I'm saying is that the district each year is supposed to come up with what what an equivalent dwelling unit is. And in light of the fact that it's the district has never completed its analysis of recycled water as to residential sale of recycled water. And so therefore, if there's ever an analysis of what an EDU is, it's going to have to take into consideration recycled water, whether that lowers it from 1.0 to 1.0 or 0.9 or 0.8 or 0.7 or whatever the understanding is with the district. And then, of course, the district has expressed, in my opinion, their concern about ADUs, accessory dwelling units, being a larger burden on the water treatment and the water storage in the district than I think is necessary. But that be it as it may, there are many, many parcels in current Rancho Murrieta and in proposed Rancho North, lot sizes that would be able to put accessory dwelling units on them. And there needs to be a conversation and a dialogue about how the district wants to handle that. Right now, the state ties your hands in a number of ways. And so let's not get up against the 11th hour and have a bunch of applications in front of the district and the district throw up its hand and says, we need to do a 6-month study. Now, that work needs to go on now, particularly in regard to recycled water, EDU, what you're doing with 20 by 2020, and the contractual obligations you have to modify what an EDU is every year.
I don't have to participate in it, but by law, I have to listen to it.
All right, John, I understand what you're saying. So would you want to provide something in writing, or you want me to just interpret what you're saying and make the assumption that every lot big enough could potentially have an ADU on it? We need to revise our use plan.
That wasn't the basis of my, conversation at improvements.
Okay.
But what I'd like to suggest is that some time be set aside in your annual planning session for this all to be talked about.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, a couple of problems in my own travels. Number one, the county has no idea what we're supposed to do. And I asked them, and I kind of interpreted to be that we kind of make it up as we go along. You know, I was looking for guidelines from them, specifically with Pahuli. I had started a letter to Leanne Moffitt at some point, which I haven't gotten around to finishing or writing, trying to understand from the county standpoint what it is they want us to do. But I think it does need to go into the planning, because John is right. It's not only when you talk about lots that have the ability to create an accessory dwelling, it's not only lots, for example, of an estate lot size, but there is also provision where in some cases you can take a garage and close it in and retrofit it and turn it into a rentable unit. There's all kinds of stuff going on in the state government. And I think everybody is just kind of hanging around waiting for someone to sue somebody else to test what of this corresponds to, for example, CC&Rs that, you know, an RMA might say, well, you can't have an accessory dwelling because it creates parking issues, and our CC&Rs say you can't park on the street. The state says that doesn't hold any water. So yeah, it's complicated. And the overall impact is not something you measure just based on development. I think John mentioned the fact that we already have, you know, a significant number of places that would offer over, say, the next 20 years, the opportunity to do exactly that, to convert a piece of property or add a dwelling. behind an existing dwelling that would create a demand on the water supply. So, you know, yeah, let's, I think we need to talk about it. I don't think there's any question.
John, don't you think that Pahuli and Leanne Moffitt, Joelle and all that group down there would much prefer Rancho Murrieta to pioneer the way, and then we get sued so they stay out of the fray?
Oh, I'm sure that they would do that. And you know, like a lot of stuff they do down there, I think they lack the initiative to stand out front of some of these issues. But, you know, at some point, you're right, at some point we have to deal with it. And like I said, I think it's going to be in flux for quite a while, because I think there are ultimately going to be some lawsuits throughout the state that really test this thing as to what can and can't be done. So,
but do they make a differentiation between an accessory dwelling unit that's inside the four walls of the primary residence, or is it just because it's detached?
I would bet you that nobody knows the answer to that,
because we already have that situation in Murrieta Gardens Community Association. Is there's one plan in that group that was built that there's like a mother-in-law quarters inside the four walls of the existing.
Right. Right.
And that's very common in Ranch Cordova and El Dorado Hills. They have the same same builders doing similar stuff to that.
Right. And you know, the larger the lot, the more opportunity there is to create a separate dwelling that goes out to the maximum size. So if you're looking like at a greater than 12 or a greater than 20 lot, you know, there's the opportunity somebody's physically going to build 1,100 square feet behind it. So I get it, and I'm more than happy to talk about it if everybody else is, and I'll listen to what they did in improvements, and you know, whatever we need to do, we'll begin to deal with it. Okay.
I'll time mark the recording and send it over to you and Marty and Randy so that you can hear exactly what John said in improvements.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other comments, chats, Amelia?
None.
So you move on to item four, the finance monthly updates. Paula or Tom, whoever.
That would be me. Thank you, John. Just to briefly touch on the audit, I'm still submitting documentation for Richardson CPAs to complete the fiscal year 2021 audit. We did recently close out 1920, so we have good numbers to start that fiscal year off, and hopefully we'll have some ending numbers fairly soon, which will also tie into our reserve study analysis. Also, the contract for the ERP, we plan to receive that signed contract back from Tyler Technologies by the end of this week, and hope to have that executed soon so we can have a tentative schedule for our implementation. We're also not included in this recruitment section here, but we are also recruiting for a project manager to assist with the implementation and development of the new ERP system. We are also recruiting for our accounting technician positions. We have two positions available, and our HR specialist will start January 10th. Excuse me for a second. Are you able to hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything that anyone would like me to repeat?
No.
No, I got that, Paula. That's okay.
Okay. So also finally, the reserve study report. I'm currently working with Mike Fritchie on the reserve study analysis. I know that they're still hammering out some final projects. And once I get that final list of projects from them, then I'll start working with the financial analysis of that piece. The updated reserve policy has been completed for quite some time. So we're looking to, once the financial analysis has been completed, we're looking to do a special reserve, a special board meeting to discuss the reserve study and hopefully be able to move forward with some new numbers, some good numbers, and some updated information that will take us into the next budget cycle. Any questions?
Yeah, did we hire Associated Reserves to do a new study this year?
No, this is the same study that they completed at the, I believe it was in June that they completed. So we're still using that same analysis. We do have a contract that we are discussing internally to continue using their services over the next couple of years. But right now we're using the existing study that we had about 6 months ago.
So you're going to update the reserve study yourself? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, there are some things in the reserve analysis that they did. There are some projects that have already been completed. There are some projects that were not included. There are some projects that need to be modified. So that's what the operations staff are working on. They're working to determine the validity, the longevity. Some of the items could be repaired sooner rather than later based on their report. So we're able to update that information within their current system. And so again, once that's completed, then we can work on the financial piece of it.
So they're gonna rerun it based on your input. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay.
So Paula, then just give me the time frame one more time as we What will be available for us to use as we start the budget cycle?
So we have existing financial analysis on our reserves that was provided by Ingrid Shipling from Richardson CPAs. We have that information for a prior year. So that's basically got us up to the 1920 fiscal year. So what we're doing is taking the 2021 numbers that we have, which obviously are unaudited at this point, and then looking at the current and future needs of the district based on the updated projects list and creating the analysis on probably, I'm planning on going out 30 years. So really it's probably a matter of just getting the information from operations staff once they have it finalized. So probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks, we should have that information ready and available.
Okay, and then did I catch that right? You want to have some kind of a meeting or a workshop or something as we get closer to this?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So I guess that answers my question. I was just looking, I was trying to feel comfortable with the fact that we will have something to look at as we, determine how much ground we made up in the past year and what we need to do next year. The other part of it is I'd really like to be able to focus in on particularly the next 5 years, and try and understand, if we need to accelerate this collection of reserves, then I want to make sure that we're focused in on a fixed period of time and not, trying to collect money that maybe we could spread out over, 5, 10, 15 and 20 years.
Of course. Yeah. The initial 5 years will be captured within the capital improvement plan. But that analysis will also be included within this report.
Okay. Marty, any more questions on that?
No.
All righty. Is that it, Paula?
That's all I have.
Then any questions or chats, Amelia, anything at this point?
None.
Okay. Item 5. Okay.
The competitive analysis.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, John, I'd like to make a quick introduction to this.
Okay.
This is Tom. Director Merchant and I have had many conversations about the variety of rates that we all have to pay in the general area. And John reached out to me and asked me if we could ask our staff and other people that we know to provide bills and statements from our utility providers. And if you've lived in Rancho Marietta for a long time, you have Greenfeld and you have SMUD and then you have the district and then your RMA bill. But for instance, where I live in Placer County, I get bills from like 6 different agencies to pay for my trash, my water, my sewer and such. And so John asked us to bring a bunch of paperwork in. Amelia did a great job of kind of coordinating with John. And then Director Merchant has spent a bunch of time producing this PowerPoint. So I want to say my appreciation for the fact that we have directors here that work for the district as volunteer elected officials, and they do a lot of work and a lot more work than I'm accustomed to in my many years in working with government agencies. And Paula and Michael will say the same thing. Our directors are very engaged in the process here, and I appreciate it. So that being said, I really appreciate taking a look at this, and it helps us as we move forward with the budgeting for the next fiscal year. So go ahead. So
Amelia, would you scroll down a page and everybody can start to appreciate a PowerPoint done by a 75-year-old man. What we did was based on some of the stuff that I got from the folks that work in the district and a couple of calls that I made and searching the websites of 10 different water districts. I tried to get piece together all of the parts, like Tom mentioned, that he gets bills from five or six different places, so that we could combine those together for each district, and then come up with what would be a bill that I'll show you in a little bit, that we took all of those rates and assumed that you would use 600 gallons of water per day. And then we started to see how we could compare prices amongst different districts. But on this first page, there were a couple of things that were kind of interesting. We're the only district in this study that really does its own sewer and wastewater treatment. I'll show you some maps in a minute of the Sacramento Area Sewer District and Regional SAN that are responsible for pretty much all of the sewer pipe under the ground and for sewage treatment in their giant plant down in Elk Grove. The districts that we analyze, there's about 5 different solid waste providers. We use Cal Waste. Several of the districts use the county, and then there are 3 of the cities that we compared that actually are using their own trucks at this point. And you can go ahead, Amelia, and move up one more page. So when you look, this is a water district map for the county. And what I've done is I've pointed to each of the districts and where they are. And then down below that, you'll see the number of connections, residential connections that those represent. What I thought was interesting, and we'll get onto it in a minute, in the next page, is a $1 rate increase at CSD nets $2,650. And when the county raises rates by a buck, they generate $50,000 in revenue. Could you scroll up one, Amelia, please? So these are the districts more highlighted that we used. What's significant here is how everybody in this study gets their water. Kind of the crown jewel of this is the San Juan Water District. And you can see they serve 160,000 customers. They're not all primary residential customers. They're also a wholesaler. And that district actually provides water down to Orangevale, Citrus Heights, North Folsom, Fair Oaks. And the water comes out of Folsom Lake. Basically, they put a big pipe in the ground, they pump it out, they run it through a treatment plant, run it down through the lines. Very simple process as compared to what we do for a living here. And then you can see kind of in size order, the magnitude of the districts, until you get down to this California American, which is a small district that kind of is in the Howe Avenue area that bumps up against the city of Sacramento and goes down to where Sacramento County takes over. It's a private water company and they have 5,000 connections. I put them in because I couldn't find a lot of smaller connections that really were meaningful. But at any rate, that kind of gives you an overview of the people that we studied. So Amelia, you can run up one more page if you want. This is a map of regional sanitation. It's where most of the sewage treatment takes place for all of the districts that we studied. They have a common rate. It's $37 a month. They generate $330 million in revenue. Their supervisors are essentially the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors. They serve 1,700,000 people. And we'll do a little competitive analysis in a few minutes here on our sewer. We treat our sewer charge as one. The folks that are in the regional San and the Sacramento area sewer district are getting two bills. They get them on a bi-monthly.
Okay.
What's that? They get them on a bi-monthly basis, and they're independent of their water bill. Go ahead and scroll up one, Amelia. And this is the other map. This is the map for the Sacramento area sewer district. This is the district that actually takes care of the pipes under the ground. There's 4,600 miles of them. It's a $19.85 monthly charge. And like I said a few minutes ago, it's consolidated with their water treatment bill. And their water bill again is billed separately, unlike our 2,650 connections. They service 1,200,000 customers. And all of these districts that we compared are actually using both SASD and regional San to do their sewer and sewage treatment. Go ahead, Amelia, up one more. One of the things I thought was interesting is they come up with a $56.85 combined rate for wastewater and sewage. And that compares to our 6301. And if you look at the economies of scale that we're dealing with here, and the more focused infrastructure that we have to provide to service a very fixed, small area, I think that's a pretty competitive rate. You're talking about a $7 difference. What you begin to see when you work with this stuff is there's a whole lot of stuff that we do and function pretty much, and we will formally pretty soon, but we're more and more functioning like an urban water district. And it really doesn't matter how big your district is. There are a lot of things that you do in an urban water district that are irrelevant to the number of customers that you service, which factors significantly when you start looking at the overall bill. Go ahead, Amelia, one more. When you look at solid waste, and I know we, Tom, what is ours, a 66-gallon can?
I think it's 64.
Yeah, so I couldn't get exactly, but it's close enough. The 4-gallon can really doesn't matter. We do really well here in solid waste. You look at these comparative rates, most of them are using the Sacramento County solid waste. Their rate is $28.55 versus our $21.51. And you can see, most of them are, including Folsom, which is really up there, much more expensive than we are. They don't get nearly the specialized pickups that we get as well. So I think from the standpoint of Cal Waste, I think that's still a really good deal for us. Interestingly, in looking at the county website, they have a five-year rate posting now through 2025. And we've had some discussions about this, and this is going to impact us significantly. The 2025 rate for the county now is proposed to go from $28.55 up to $41.03. And our $21.51 is not going to hold. I think we're going to be subject to a lot of that specialized waste treatment that we're going to have to begin to do. So I can really anticipate that our rates are going to go up as well. Go ahead up one more page, Amelia. So here's what I'd like to, you know, think about in the next few months, using as part of our 218 notice, or using in a way that we could begin to educate folks on the CSD bill and what it represents and why it costs as much as it does. If you see from largest bill, and I'll show you how I got these in a minute, you know, we are not the most expensive game in town, but we are close. However, if you look at, you know, the median of this, which is, you know, the $172 to $175 range, with all the infrastructure that we have to provide and all the reporting that we have to do, we're really only $20 off these huge providers that have just enormous economies of scale that we don't enjoy. There's very few people. You know, most of this water comes out of wells or it comes out of Folsom Lake. And, you know, they're not drawing water out of a river with five pumps and pumping it 2 miles uphill into Lake Calero and dropping it down by gravity to Lake Chesboro, dropping it down by gravity again to the water treatment plant, running it through the water treatment plant, running it back up into a tank, gravity feeding it down again to the people that drink the water. So it probably costs $20 a month to do that. It's really significant and very important and part of another discussion that we have to have and some education I think that we have to do, that $196 charge based on my analysis does not include the security fee. There is no way to compare our security fee to any of these other nine districts because they, along with everybody else who runs the CSD in the state of California, does nothing like we do. So when you add 35 or 37 bucks to this, the perception is that you now have a, quote, utility bill. That utility bill includes security, but I think it's worthy of understanding that we are fairly competitive, okay, before you add that fee in. Now, we're having a whole bunch of different kinds of discussions on security and what we ought to do with it in the future and how much we ought to charge. But when we go out with a 218 notice, I'd really like to see us go out with something that formally explains the utility side of this and our competitiveness in this area. And then we can add on the security charge and say, you know, we as a community based on Measure J and anything else we might do down the road have elected to add on to that. But I think it's worthy of a discussion and some marketing to really start an education program that's consistent with our 218 notice. So why don't you move up one more slide, Amelia? So you can, you know, if anybody's interested, you can look at this at your leisure. What I did to get these rates was basically I took, you know, the base rate, the base rate, which is what everybody pays for water, and they are all over the lot. There are variable rates, which I reduced to dollars per cubic feet. Almost all districts sell them, if you want to call it that, as dollars per 100 cubic feet. Our 218 notice reflects it as a per cubic foot charge, and that's incorrect, and that's something we need to fix. I don't know how long it's been that way. And then I put everybody on basically the same amount of cubic feet. And then I computed a usage cost. So if you take the base rate and the usage cost, you get a total water charge. And based on their SASD rate or their solid waste rate and their local sewer rate, I plugged in their charges. And then to the very right, you can see what the total utility cost really is for each of these different districts. I think it's important too, because we got a lot of folks living here that lived in these places before they got here. So it does include the reserve. It includes the $6. The one thing that it's missing is the $5 drainage fee, because that gets clouded because a lot of that is absorbed in base rates by other districts and stuff. So, you know, like I said, and these things are in flux because everybody changes rates at different times. Not everybody's on the same fiscal year and the same budgetary cycle that we are. So, but it, I think it's pretty close, and it gives you a pretty good understanding of what's going on in the general area. So one more, Amelia. I already mentioned that, you know, the security tax is not in here. And I think we need to stress that because, you know, in round numbers, 2 million of the 7 million that we deal with is a security fee. I talked about the drainage tax. I talked about the 218 notice and not only making that minor correction in it, but Tom and I have talked a little bit about maybe some ways we can better communicate that 218. There are a lot of agencies that use the opportunity of the rate increase to, if you want to call it, you know, blow their own horn, highlight what's gone on in the year. You know, we don't have the public relations resources that some of these people have, but it would be nice to communicate a little more than just the price. Nobody is doing what we do with wastewater. We are essentially, you know, transferring sewage treatment back into a nearly drinkable commodity, transporting it over and dumping it onto a golf course, which is a very noble process. I mean, all of that water is going back into the water table, but it does cost money to do that. And based on our water rights and how we got here to begin with, there is no way that our community could exist if we did not do that and we didn't pay the fee. Of note, and I mentioned it before about what we do as being as close as we are to an urban water district. You know, we have maps and even construction now that is going to take us past that threshold where we will physically and formally become an urban water district. So, like I said before, there's an awful lot of stuff that we do and an awful lot of infrastructure that's specialized that we provide just to make our system work. And we don't have the economies of scale yet. And these 350 new connections will certainly help to do that. We don't have that ability yet to spread these costs around. And our, you know, like we said, you know, $1 in rate fees raises us $2,650. So, you know, it's a problem. One thing I'd like to do also is almost everywhere I went into these 9 different websites, they have clearly published rates. And I'd like to talk at some point about creating a top line heading where people can go in there and click on it and pull up the rates anytime they want to. And we talked a little bit about solid waste and what it represents as a significant potential impact on rates. And I really think that's coming. And it may be, you know, we've had some of these discussions in board meetings already where Jack from Cal Waste has come up and spoken to us. I think we need to start to get people ready for that, because I think over the next 5 years, our rates are really going to go up in solid waste. So that's about it. You know, if anybody has any questions, you know, I can try and deal with it, or you can, you know, get a hold of me if you go through this and there's anything you want to talk about. Any hands or chats or anything, Amelia?
I got a question, John.
Yeah.
I think we should talk to Jack at Callaway sooner rather than later as well, because this food waste issue and composting and green waste are going to continue to evolve. And I think at some point in time, we have to find out what their intervention level is and what they're intending to do from a service standpoint and from a cost standpoint, because it makes very little sense to me to have residential food waste and non-residential food waste and wet waste to be handled independently. The state's making us break new ground, but there's no roadmap. And
right.
if we don't help create a roadmap for ourselves, they're just going to come along and say, well, that's $25 to deal with the wet waste, and we're going to do it this way, because that may be the most cost effective for them, but it may not be the most cost effective for a CSD customer.
Right.
So we need to intervene. We need to be proactive. And if we don't have a conversation sooner rather than later, we're in the process at the Equestrian Center of trying to formalize our composting business over there to decide what we're going to do as requirements for stormwater runoff get more and more intense over time. We want to make sure we're ahead of the curve. And some of this is the same thing when you've got green waste on the ground and you're composting it, or you're taking green waste and food waste and you're combining it, or whatever the answer is. We should know what our options are before they tell us what it's going to cost. I'd rather know early rather than late that we had an opportunity to get in the middle of it and let's figure it out.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And you can see from what the county's saying, well, you know, they're charging $28.55 now, and you know, they're projecting over a 5-year period, and I'm not even sure that's not low, that they're gonna go to $41. And again, you go back to, well, even if the county is right and they've done some analysis with their staff from the landfill, you know, again, they're working maybe with economies of scale that we're not working with. So it's quite feasible that if that $41 was right, that our bill might be 50. I don't know that, but you know, you're right. I think it's something that we need to try and figure out, at least have a general idea of where this thing is going to go.
I would like to step in for a second here, Director Merchant and John Sullivan. We are in regular conversations with Cal Waste. And at this point in time, the plan for the residential is that they're going to have some sort of mechanism or bag that we're going to utilize to take the organic waste to put it in the green cans for the residences. And that's their plan so far. This whole process is fairly new to them. You'll notice that we put an article in the pipeline recently talking about it. And we're going to continue the conversation and continue to stay on Cal Waste to make sure that we're handling this as efficiently as possible. To be honest, Jack said that the counties or the requirements of Cal Recycle is to actually audit trash cans to where they'll wander around and pick up the lids and see what's in there in the future. I can't believe it. That's the reality we're looking at. But we are in very, very clear conversations with Cal Waste, trying to make sure that our rates stay as low as possible. All the while educating our ratepayers on, you know, this is a state law; it has to be adhered to as best we can. And there may be some people who've never dealt with organic waste separately than their regular waste that are going to hopefully pay attention to what the future holds. And eventually these regulations will be heavily enforced, I would guess. Thanks for your comment, Mr. Sullivan, and we are staying on it.
Can we ask a question of them? Are they processing any green waste in their own owned facilities, or are they subcontracting that out to somebody, or are they just up to this point taking the green waste and putting it in the landfill and paying the tipping fee?
So this is a really good question for Director Merchant, because he actually toured the facility a couple of years ago. John, would you say that they were processing their own green waste?
No, I don't recall seeing that. We were pretty focused on everything else that was going on, but it just, you know, and it really probably just involves a call to Jack, because I don't remember seeing it. I think per capita, because of the lots that we have and you know, the extensive number of estate lots and everything else, and the extensive number of people that have multiple cans, I think on a per capita basis we generate a lot, you know. We're not the largest district in the world, but I think individually, house by house, we're generating a lot of this stuff.
John, don't we have a, when you take the recyclables out of the mix and you take the green waste, have it separate container, and then you've got the wet waste or the food waste that's going to be in a bag or in a separate container of some kind, whether it be plastic bag or a small, you know, tote or whatever. Aren't we to the point now where everything that isn't handled one of those ways is going to go to the landfill?
You're probably not far off. I mean, you know, we had a program here. I can't tell you how long ago, 20 years ago. And we were in it, and we have a composter, and you know, I have a big common space behind me, and I have, you know, room where I can stick this 2-foot by 2-foot can that we use for food waste. I mean, for everything other than food waste. So really the only thing that's going into my can is food waste. And I mean, we're essentially now in that brown can. We put out, you know, a 13 gallon plastic bag, you know, every week that's not full. I mean, so yeah, we're down to a level where we're sorting everything to the extent that there is residue that's not good for anything, you know, and I guess that, yeah, that goes to the landfill and gets buried.
Well, we're spending $1 million paying to have all these separated materials go various directions. And the service that they give is fantastic for what we pay.
Yeah, it is.
But the question is, you know, when we have 4,000 customers and not 2,700, you know, we're talking about what, a couple million dollars? And do we want to just continue to be, have somebody be an intermediary, or do we want to partner up with them and figure out how to get food waste and the green waste taken care of if it's not being taken care of? Otherwise, we can't control our costs. Otherwise, yeah, Somebody else from the outside is going to tell us what that add-on is going to be to Rancho Murrieta.
Well, it's worth a discussion. That, you know, and like Tom said, we've got an ongoing dialogue with them. I think everybody at this point, including the county, you know, even with the rates that they published, I think they're still trying to figure it out as well. But any other
comments? I do have a comment from Richard Gears. Go ahead, Richard.
John, it wasn't clear to me what you said about other districts publishing their rates. Did you say they do or they don't?
No, they do. We do as well, Richard, except what I was pointing to is on several of the websites, it is a primary, I don't know what the word is, button click place that it says rates and you can click there and it will give you a highlight essentially of what we plug into our 218 notices and our average residential bill that we publish and is on our website. It's just an encapsulated version of what their residential rates are. One of the other things I didn't mention that I should have, and we don't have the horsepower or manpower to get into it yet, but there's a lot that's being done with tiered pricing. And it's being done in a couple of different ways. Some districts now include a fixed amount of water in your base rate, you know, whether that might be 300 gallons per day. And then they start their variable and their, you know, per 100 cubic foot rate based on that point. Some of them have a base rate and then they already have a two-tier rate. The first rate may be going to that 150 gallons and then they break off into a higher rate beyond that. There may be something we can do with that at some point that takes better care of the smaller lots and smaller users to where the variable is really going to people with bigger lots who choose by choice to do the kind of landscaping that requires more water. But like I said, I don't think, you know, we have a bunch of fish to fry here before we get into that, but it's something, you know, and if we ever hit up against years where we're going to start to have conservation issues, you know, due to drought or whatever, it might help to have that kind of a rate base in place. But, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Anything else, Amelia?
No chats, no hands.
Okay,
so I have a question. I was on mute.
Go ahead, Marty.
The slide that you have, you said something about a 218 notice is incorrect. What's incorrect about it?
Only that it shows an O2 rate per cubic foot, and it's per 100 cubic feet. The bill's correct because the minute I saw it, I went to my bill to make sure it was right. The bill's right, but and I have no idea. I didn't go back. But we may have been doing this for a very long time and nobody ever caught it. But almost all districts, I think all of the districts that I looked at, their variable rate is billed on a per 100 cubic foot rate and not on a cubic foot rate.
The rate that we have on our bills and on the rate schedule is 02.
Yeah, it's 02. Oh, I can't remember what the last number is, 029 or 026 or whatever it is.
But it says it's cubic feet per cubic foot. But our bill actually says it's 100 cubic foot.
Yes, it does. It does. That's where I was picking up the inconsistency that I wanted to make sure we correct. But I did check my bill and the bill is right.
Yeah, we bill for every tick of 100 cubic feet for every 748 gallons.
Yeah. So and you know I used 2,440 cubic feet, which creates a bill that's $196 in total. And you know we have an average bill that when you add security in is about in that area, But there's a lot of people who use less. I didn't want to create the illusion that we were trying to say, well, look how cheap the rates are. So I used the healthy amount of water when I did the analysis. But everybody was every district was computed on the same amount of water. So the result is the same, but I didn't want to use less average gallons per day than what I used.
Are you saying our bill is correct?
Our bill is correct. Yes.
My bill says I used 1,100 cubic feet, and I multiply it times that, and it comes out the amount that I'm charged. So I think it's incorrect.
Or the bill is incorrect. One of them is correct, and one of them is incorrect. And now I'm confused. I can't remember which one was which.
The ordinance says 0.02 per cubic foot.
Well, 0.02 per cubic foot is based on go back to the Excel sheet.
Yes, very good. Okay. This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So those are the actual cubic foot rates.
Yeah.
What does your bill say, Marty? What does your bill say?
My bill says I used 1,100, and it comes. The usage rate is correct when you multiply it times 0.02, but the bill actually says 100 cubic foot, which is incorrect.
Right. Okay.
Which bill are you looking at, Martin? Which month?
I sent it to you a couple of months ago. I sent you October, and I think our form is wrong on the bill.
Yeah, the form's wrong. The math is correct. But
math is correct. The form is wrong.
Right, right.
Okay, we'll take a look at that.
And go back to, and just make sure that our 218 notices are consistent with what the bills are.
Okay.
All righty. Any other questions?
No,
I don't have any.
All right. Give us the agenda again then, Amelia. Mm-hmm. Item six, Tom, is this security opinion poll?
Yes. As I committed to at the last three or four times we discussed the security opinion poll, I have met individually with various board members who wanted to have input. And I've also met with residents who wanted to have input, a couple of them with an extended amount of time going over some of the details. And I believe the poll is ready to be issued, to be conducted. And what I want to let you know now, I'm ready to say that the pollster True North is poised to with board approval, and I believe we need to take it to the board and let the board know we're moving forward with this and the timeline as an informational item, and basically letting the finance committee know. The questionnaire I think is ready to go. We've made some adjustments based upon input from board members and from residents. And we're now ready to give True North the clearance to conduct the poll. And what they would do is during the month of February, conduct their poll as prescribed in their contract. And then hopefully by April, come back to the finance committee with their findings. With the presentation for the board at the April board meeting. Following that, if the results are such that it's a favorable option, that we take a ballot, we take a measure to the ballot, a referendum to the ballot in say November, we'll begin the process of hiring the right people to support us as far as people who help run elections and get attorneys involved in making sure we do everything legally, and start on the educational campaign that takes place when districts take financial measures to their voters, like the district did in 1998 with measures K and J. I guess it was 1996 or seven with measures K and measure J. And with that, I was planning on producing the questions, but highly recommended by the pollster to not do so in order to eliminate what they call in the industry the self-selection bias, which whereby people already know their answers before they're called on the phone. And so that's my report to the finance committee. It's been, we've been working on this since last summer. And I think it's time to say we're ready to go. Some people may have issues with parts of some questions, but we hired an expert to do their job, and I believe they're doing a good job. And I think we'll find out whether or not the residents of Rancho Marietta are ready to vote on another special tax to improve, increase, and expand to fund the current level of security, which is why this is a finance committee issue, and also maybe to expand the amount we spend on security based upon the results of the poll. I can answer questions, and I already see that there's a hand up. So I'll, what's the process, Amelia? Question from the board and then from the public?
That's yes, correct. Questions from the board and then the public.
I have had a couple of interactions with the pollster, and he has more than sufficiently answered my questions that I had, and I had some of the ones that other people had. And he was able to give me some really significant, solid reasons that we should do what we're doing. So from my standpoint, I'm ready to go here. Marty?
I've been asking since the summer for a derivation of these costs we're proposing in the survey. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm not ready.
Say that again, Marty. I lost you.
I said I've been asking since the summer for a derivation of these costs that we're proposing in the study or in the survey, and I haven't seen it yet, and we were promised it last month, so I'm not ready to go till I see it.
Well, the cost that we're proposing, Martin, and I think it's a good idea to have this conversation. The cost that we're proposing, as far as when you say derivation, you mean the various steps?
Yeah, there's what's in the first step. How did we get there? What's included? Where does the cost come from? That kind of stuff.
The first step, and again, our hands are kind of tied with our financial system, but the very first step that they're questioning involves having a special tax increase that fully funds the level of security that we have today, basically that will offset the amount of property taxes
that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see how you got that.
Well, again, our finance system is, we could produce budget reports, but we don't have all the faith in the world in them right now.
So how do we have any faith in what he's telling the people in the survey?
Well, the very first step was the amount of money that is being spent divided by the number of ratepayers. And the second step was to add a level of service that has been done in the past. And the third step was to provide more services than have been provided in the past, such as two patrol officers for a good part of every day or during the heavy times. And then,
well, why don't you send me what you got?
Okay, I'll send you what we have and I'll walk you through it. And then we can bring it to the board, and hopefully by then you'll be satisfied that your questions have been answered, or we go back to the drawing board and rerun the numbers again.
So Tom, let me suggest this then. We're looking to approve sending this to the board, and we'll, if it's okay with Marty, we'll do that conditional on his discussion with you and his satisfaction with the associated costs for the various levels. Is that okay?
Yes.
That's what I was looking for, but I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Well, I'll schedule a time for you to come into the office, Martin.
Well, send me the things first so I can see it, and then we can talk.
Okay.
And I will add that to the board agenda, provided Martin is okay with the answers that he receives. I do have two hands raised. Are you ready for comments?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'll start with Richard Gears because he raised his hand first.
Okay. Richard?
Hey, I'd certainly be interested in seeing those numbers that Martin's interested in seeing. So I hope those are available to the public.
Well, they'll be available to the public after the poll has been conducted.
Oh.
And the reason for that is because if we publish all this stuff beforehand, it taints the survey. And that is from the recommendation of the pollster.
Okay. The reason I actually raised my hand was I think some director, I think it's probably Martin, raised the question about whether it's permissible to charge different rates for different lots. And okay. You, Tom, were going to pursue that. I'm wondering what's come of that.
The answer to your question, it's not permissible to charge different rates for different lots. So every parcel gets charged the same amount. And that's based on an opinion from our attorney. And so that's, we changed the direction of the poll at the time, was requesting what if there was a different rate for different parcels. And the answer, we took that question out because there can only be one rate for every parcel, regardless of the size.
Okay, so the questions in the poll will reflect that.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
You had one more, Amelia, correct?
Mr. Sullivan?
So what was supposed to be very transparent to the community is now going to be done by some secret committee that's going to then send a paid-for survey call for the community to decide whether there's enough support to tax all of us an undetermined amount of money. Did I recap that appropriately?
I don't know, John.
I just want to know the answer to the Ted Hart question.
I met with Ted Hart.
Okay. So you met with Ted Hart. The question is there any, as Dick Brandt said, and as Ted alluded to, you have not considered the fact that there needs to be a question on whether the service leaves CSD in total, if the cost could be substantially reduced, or whatever the words are that he was concerned about and Dick was confirming at the meeting that I was at a couple months ago. Because at the end of the day, you guys, the way I understand it now, you've been completely unclear and untransparent on whether you're intending to leave the existing Measure J in place and just tack on more money coming to the district on a parcel by parcel basis for every parcel in the district, or some derivative thereof.
John, I can be very clear about that. We are not touching Measure J. This is an entirely new special tax initiative. If we go forward with anything, it will be a new tax initiative that will not touch Measure J.
So all of the overcharges that have been happening for the last 20, 30 years are going to be left in place, because you know that if you went out for a new vote, that it wouldn't be 218 compliant, right?
The Measure J, as approved by the voters.
I'm saying if you went out for a security tax, whether it be a parcel tax or otherwise, if you went out for a parcel tax to take care of all of the security budget of $2 million, and you laid out it's going to be this much per parcel, and that's all you were asking everybody to vote on, you know that what you lose is the overcharges on all the properties that are being dramatically overcharged, because you're analyzing them all being already broken up into lots, correct?
All I can say, John, is Measure J, as it is does its job, and our poll is deciding whether or not the voters will approve an additional initiative to complement Measure J to help fund the full cost and maybe an extended cost of security that will then take the burden off of property taxes for funding security and allow property taxes to fund infrastructure upgrades as it should be in a special district.
Do we have more here?
I do not have any more comments or hands raised.
Let's see, where are we? Board strategic planning and budget workshop.
So hang on just one second. So we're starting to set up dates to do our strategic planning workshop and setting the board goals. We did this, I believe, towards the end of February last year. And so the plan is, first and foremost, to have the reserve report completed and presented to the board in a special meeting and get board direction on the level of funding that we're going to be adding to or not to the monthly bills in order to meet the strategic goals of reserves and our infrastructure management. And then we want to sit down with the board and kind of go through the process of taking a look at last year's goals and probably the last couple of years' goals and see how well a job we've done with addressing those goals and bringing initiatives forward, such as the ERP, such as the long-awaited reserve report, and then figure out what the board wants to do from there. And then we go back and we generate the new proposed budget numbers. And in March, we come forward with that. So by the end of March, we have our Prop 218 budget ready to go. And then we publish that and we mail it all out to everybody and we see what sort of response we get from our ratepayers, our voters. And so this is just kind of an update. If there's anything specific or different that the Finance Committee would like us to address, now's the time, or then we can also discuss it once we sit down and go over the reserve reports.
No, I don't have anything, you know, other than, you know, I the word strategic planning versus what we've traditionally used as setting goals, are those one and the same?
Yes, those are one and the same.
Okay. I like setting goals better, but, you know, I've had adverse reactions lately to those two words, strategic planning. Okay. But okay, I'm fine with. So are you just going to report that out, or at the meeting, or bring a schedule, or reiterate what we just did? What is there anything we need to move forward?
The hope is to have a schedule at the next board meeting. To produce the schedule at the next board meeting.
Okay, and does that have to be like an action item, or is that part of your report? How do you do that?
It'll be part of the finance report.
Okay. Marty, you okay there?
That seems like a reasonable schedule. I suppose we're supposed to be done by when?
The end of March. We have to publish our Prop 218 notice 45 days before the April board meeting, mm-hmm. which is April 16th. So if you go backwards, you end up with the very end of February. I have it wrong. The very end of February, the beginning of March.
And I have that board meeting for 2022 is April 20th. Am I looking at that wrong?
No. Oh yeah, April 20th.
Are you in 2021 still, Tom?
Yes.
Okay, good.
April 20th. I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong calendar, the wrong month in the calendar.
So just, Tom, just consistent with that, then I'm making the assumption that for at least this year, this coming year, we're going to be planning to utilize the significant chunk of that county rebate, that 1% coming back to supplement the security budget. Is that true?
The county rebate.
Well, in other words, our county allocation, our annual allocation of $750,000,
property taxes.
Yeah, property tax allocation. I'm assuming then that through this process, a big chunk of that will get allocated into propping up security again, correct?
That'll have to be approved by the board, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I want to say that I have to have the Prop 218 notice out 45 days prior to the board meeting in May, because that's the day we have the public hearing, is the board meeting the third Wednesday in May. And I don't want to but that's what I've got on my sheet up here on the wall, Tom.
So I hate to sound like I have lost my mind, but what day did we produce the Prop 218 notice last year? I'm sorry.
It was we waited until Paula came on, and that was the last of March. So it was April 2nd, that Saturday, that it went out in the mail in 2021.
So the May is the first reading of the budget.
Exactly. And that's the public hearing. And so the folks have 25 days to send in their protest letters. And I have to have them 5 p.m. or something by that hearing date.
So the Prop 218 budget will be presented hopefully at the March 16th board meeting.
Okay.
And then published as far as the Prop 218 notice, the end of March, early April.
Yeah.
I appreciate you clarifying that for me.
Okay.
Anything else here?
No, that's all.
Comments, Amelia? Anything? Chats? Comments?
No chats. No comments.
Okay. Comments and suggestions. Let's do the staff first. Tom, anything?
I have nothing.
Paula?
I do not have anything. Thank you. Okay. And thank you, John, for your presentation. I greatly appreciate that information.
Let me see. Anybody else? Nope. Marty?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting that new software going, and sounds like you're making good progress on it. So kudos to you for that. And let's hope everything goes smooth.
We talked about anything else, Marty, first of all?
No.
We talked about at the last board meeting, we talked about focusing perhaps on the invoicing module as a priority. Did you guys come to any conclusions on that?
We're in the final stages of signing the contract with Tyler, and that's in the discussion.
Okay.
They have thousands of customers and probably hundreds of projects going on at any one time. So we've asked them to look into the potential for, is it possible to do the utility module in front of doing the general ledger? And, you know, they've probably been asked the question before. So once we have the contract or final stages of the contract, we should have that answer.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be, overly upset with the fact that we were going to deal with general ledger first. I was just making that comment in the board meeting in the context that, I understand that we need to get our chart of accounts in line and get general ledger completed. But beyond that, then maybe what I'd really like to prioritize is most importantly, where we actually, touch our customers. And that seems to be invoicing. So, maybe as we go forward, we can bring that back up again and you'll just let us know where we are.
Okay. We should have those answers by the next board meeting.
I just had one more comment to back up to the security poll, and just my point of view on this has been, and I know it's complicated, but what I'm personally trying to learn here more than anything is if inside the community there is a willingness to pay more money. I've talked to Ted on numerous occasions, Ted Hart, and I appreciate some of the work that he's done, and I appreciate the options that we would have in front of us. But I really think that those are secondary discussions that we might have after we understand really if, you know, $35 or $37 is a ceiling, you know, plus our 1 or 2% increase, or is there an opportunity here to raise more money to do more things? Once we know the real answer to that, then there are a lot of options. And I think there's a second level of discussions that probably can go on, but I still really am interested in finding out, taking the temperature of the community as to, you know, are we paying enough, or are we paying as much as we want to pay? So that's all I have. Anything else we need to do here? In that case, then we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thanks, everybody.
All right, thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.